This is the Future of IP Protection podcast, brought to you by MorphVision. This show is dedicated to arming companies with the skills, know-how, and technology they will need to future-proof their IP protection strategy for the years ahead.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. I'm Brandi Spence, Head of Marketing with MorphVision. Today, we're thrilled to have Paul May, Vice President of Creative and Production at USAopoly, a developer and manufacturer of board games and puzzles, partnering with popular brands such as Disney, Nintendo, and Microsoft. Paul, thanks so much for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Brandi. I appreciate it.
So let's kick things off by having you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your journey at USAopoly.
Sure. The USAopoly is a, like you said, we're a licensed board game company. We got our start with Monopoly and in 1994. They were a client of mine at a local print company that we have here that I was working at here in San Diego. And they needed an in-house designer and production coordinator. And so I made the transition and move over to there. I grew up in a small town in Florida in the Florida Panhandle. I made my way west. Joined the Marine Corps. And then after I got out of the Marine Corps, I got in the printing industry, and that's how I landed there. And then from that, I kind of landed at USAopoly. And I've been here officially since 1997, but I've been moonlighting with them since 1994.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. And it's very interesting always to hear about the different diverse paths that people take to their current roles, and yours is certainly interesting. Let's dive into the state of IP protection today. How would you summarize the current state of IP protection?
You know, it's tough, especially for us. We're a licensee of a lot of these brands that we have. And so the best way for us to protect ourselves is to put our marks on a lot of these products and use those marks to help us with the IP protection. Trying to protect the licensor's brands can be a little bit difficult because we're not brand owners in that sense. And so for us, that's the challenge. In the general scheme of things, I think it's identifying who these bad players are within the marketplace. And that's probably the most challenging part, figuring out where they are, how they're doing it, how do we stop them, and what are the best tools that we can use to get that process going.
Yeah. What has been? Why don't you tell us a little bit about what your experience has been in dealing with the counterfeiters at USAopoly specifically?
Yeah, so we started off in making Monopoly games and putting what we called a custom twist on those Monopoly games, a fun twist. And we didn't really notice any knockoffs out there. The only knockoffs we'd consider were people that were making Opoly-style games, you know, that were competing with us. So it wasn't really that they were knocking off. They were just competitors of ours. We didn't really notice what was going on until we started to get into other brands like chess. We had a lot of tooling for a football chess game that we were doing, and we were doing colleges. And then we found one that was a college rival that we had not produced. It was definitely our tooling. It had our marks on the bottom of the tools. It also had our UPC on the game from another game in our portfolio of games that we had. And that's how we kind of discovered it. This is, I don't want to say it's pre-internet, but it was before the internet marketplace was really popular. And so it was by accident. It was just at a bookstore in a college, saw it, realized it wasn't ours, picked it up to look at it, and then realized it was a counterfeit, but using all of our own things. And it turned out to be the manufacturer saw an opportunity and did it. And we confronted him on it with the anticipation of really going head to head with them to fight with them about this. They acknowledged that, you know, some manufacturer's philosophy is it's better to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Right.
And so they stopped, you know, and that is one of the best vendors that we have is that vendor that actually did that. And that was back in 1998. And it just kind of, we've been together ever since, and they're personal close friends of mine. We started seeing other games. We'd get customer service calls, and our philosophy here is to make everybody's game experience 100% satisfactory to the best of our ability. So whether you like the game or not is something we can't really fix, but we want to make sure the game's operational and you can play it and be satisfied with what you get. We started getting, we did a Transformers Monopoly game we started seeing requests come through that the pieces were terrible. They were plastic movers were breaking. The printing was horrible. It just looked bad. We didn't put plastic movers in the game. We had metal movers in the game. So that kind of
red flag right there.
And then for our purpose, we asked the customers to, can you send us the game? We'll pay for the shipping of the game to us. We evaluated it, looked at it. I personally sent them a game out that replaced that, that was a legitimate game, and to kind of make their experience whole. Trying to find that player that was doing that was almost impossible. We couldn't figure it out because the search tools online weren't really prominent to be able to figure out exactly where this whole thing was coming from. But we've really used our customers, whether they be retail customers or just customers that are buying it from our website or from a website anywhere. We listen to their requests, their customer service requests that they have, evaluate them. If we can tell from the pictures that it's counterfeit, then we ask them to send it to us so that we can further kind of investigate that. It's fun turning some of these customers into investigators just by way of them sending us the information that they use to purchase it. And then I've also used factories to help me identify some of these things. So I get a lot of pitches from a lot of factories. I see our product within their pitches that they provide to us, whether it be a catalog or it be a presentation. Mm-hmm. And it's a picture of our product in their showroom, and I'm not producing with that particular person. So I have to kind of look at it and decide, you know, is this a somebody subcontracting, which isn't allowed either? Or is it somebody that's actually knocked it off and they're selling it? They don't realize who I am or what our company is.
And they pitch it to you.
And they pitch it to me. And then I travel a lot, or prior to the pandemic, I was traveling probably 4 months out of the year. I was on the road, and a lot of it was done in Asia. We've got manufacturers here in the US and in Asia. And I would go to Asia. Any factory that wanted me to come in and look at their factory, I would accept the invitation just to look around. And it wasn't to steal ideas or anything. It was really just to see what they were doing. I wanted to see their showroom. I wanted to see the products they had in it. You know, number one, to see if it was like product that we're doing, so I could, maybe there's a chance we could partner in manufacturing, or they had something of mine within that thing. And I've been kicked out of factories because I discovered somebody that was actually injection molding some pieces of that were ours.
Really?
Yeah. And I walked in, I noticed it, and I said, "What's up with that?" and asked them a question. They immediately realized that I had discovered what they were doing. And they security came, grabbed me, took me out of the factory and put me outside the gate. And that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really eye opening. How do you deal with situations like that? Do you then involve law enforcement, or have you taken action on those?
The ones that I discovered were so small, it didn't really warrant a lot of police action in that whole thing. What I did do was I had an agent in Hong Kong that I was going through, and they were my conduit into a lot of these factories. So even if I wasn't doing business, if it wasn't a factory they were doing business with, I would ask them to go along with me, and possibly they could use that factory for our product. Mm-hmm. So I could kind of turn them loose on some of the stuff and say, that's a bad actor. I would prefer that we never do business with them at all. And in one case, like the one where I discovered that they had knocked something off, they were a current vendor of that agent. And that agent now found out that they were doing something shady. And within 3 years, that factory was out of business because they pulled all their business from them. A couple of other, industry-wide, I have a lot of friends that are also in the same position I am at competitive companies. Mm-hmm. We're close friends. We see each other in China and in Hong Kong. We hang out together. We sometimes go in and do factory tours together as competitors. Yeah. We compare notes. We call each other. We talk to each other. I ask them, you know, when I'm in a factory, I say, "Hey, are you doing business with these guys? How are they?" And they'll either say they are or they're not. And I said, "Well, these guys are making your stuff," and they kind of let us know. So I'm not an investigator. I'm just a knuckle dragger, and I'm just just kind of making my way through everything. But
you bring up some really good points. I mean, it's a very collaborative process, whether you're working with your own customers. I'm sure there's some consumer education, or they're educating you of what they're seeing out there, or even with your competitors and then these agents that you're working with. And even, as you mentioned, your manufacturers. So such a collaborative process in order to really tackle the issue, right?
Yeah. And we've had some retailers that email us like a quote sheet from somebody. And a lot of times it's coming from either social media or things like that. And it's a flyer that has a list of games on it with prices and minimum order quantities for those items. And a lot of them are ours. A lot of them are competitors, which are some friends of mine, you know, and it's a third of what we're selling wholesale to these retailers. So they're asking us either, are you gouging me, or is this legitimate? And so they've turned into, you know, secretly, they've turned into investigators for us, and they alert us, and then we start tracking stuff down, and we've hired some private investigators to try and find the people that were behind the flyer that was out there. Very difficult to actually find a person attached to some of that. So
I'm sure I can imagine. Do you guys internally look also online for any of these issues?
We do. We scour the internet. We've got some tools to be able to do that. We joined the IACC several years ago. I'm also on the Alibaba's, their SAC committee, which is the Small Business Advisory Committee. I joined that. And so the tools that they provide, and especially the IACC's come up with some great toolkits, and the SAC's come up with great toolkits for us to use to kind of guide us through that process in a lot of cases. And we have tools that we use, probably similar to what Mark Vision's doing, that allows you to find some of these things. And look.
Sure. Well, let's pivot a little bit. I mean, obviously, those are some different technologies that you use, but let's talk about emerging technologies that you think might present novel IP challenges in the coming years. Can you talk to us about any that you think are out there that you should be watching for?
Yeah, for us, because we're in the board game industry, and there are figurines in a lot of the games that we do. So as 3D technology becomes more available to just the general consumer, some in a small way, some in a much larger fashion, it allows a lot of these counterfeiters to get into the 3D piece of what we do without investing a lot of money in tooling, because then it's just, you've got somebody to do a 3D sculpt of this thing and then just print 3D models, and the materials that the 3D technology allows you to use is fantastic. And you can get stuff that's ready to go in a game that can put that out, you know, you can use it as a production piece, right?
Right.
And as that has become more available, we've seen some of those issues rise up. Digital printing is prevalent, you know, I come from the printing industry. I can identify a lot of copies because I was copying stuff way back in the day when we were doing ads, you know, with film and pre-press. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we didn't have originals. We were scanning ads from old magazines of a client and then taking that ad, retypesetting it, but using the pictures in there and then putting it in the new circular that we were doing, whether it be a magazine or a newspaper ad or whatever it was. So inadvertently, I was learning how to do this, what the counterfeiters are doing.
Right.
And so as the software that you use to do design, like Photoshop and some of these things, you can make some really nice artwork to put on there and really, you know, make these things look really nice with them being a reproduction. And the digital printing makes it, there are no plates anymore, you know, they can get right into it. So being able to do that with the 3D technology has posed a kind of a problem for us in that sense.
Yeah, I'm sure. You had mentioned that you guys do certain printing or marking of your products, and so you can identify that. So I'm sure that helps you sort of discern some of those issues.
Yeah, in 2008, when the CPSC revamped their whole toy testing program, they did require tracking labels on all products. And the manufacturers can put it in whatever area, it just needs to be in some manner that you can track and trace the batch for that thing. We've used those tracking codes to be able to identify, you know, when something possibly could have been counterfeited. So if I start seeing a lot of customer requests for an item that we did 8 or 10 years ago with a tracking number that was on there that I knew from our QAQC that we were doing internally didn't have these particular problems, then most likely that's a counterfeit item. And then we do a shadow buy or something to try and figure that out, kind of get through that. Some of the manufacturers actually put laser codes on all the product as it's going through the manufacturing process. So it's a laser etched mark on that box or whatever. You can tell when that's been reproduced because you can't feel it and you can see dot. You know, I'm using a loop when I'm looking at these things and I'm looking at it. If there's dot patterns within that laser thing, then I know that it's not a laser etched on there. It's actually been printed on there.
Right. Well, obviously the bad actors are going to go with the cheapest route to just fool, right? That's all they want to do.
Cheap and quick. You know, the faster they can get that to market, the faster there's a chance that they're going to make money. They're very smart. They're very savvy. If there's a way to make money, they're going to figure out how to do that and how to do it quickly so they can just pop in and out, you know, and with probably the understanding that they could at some time get caught.
Yeah, but the penalties are so small. Sometimes it doesn't really matter.
So small. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. Well, as the world becomes increasingly interconnected and additionally more technology driven, having a strong IP strategy is obviously more important than ever. What are some of the key elements that you, in your opinion, make for a successful strategy?
For us, on our owned IP, we register those trademarks. We don't really have anything that's patented or patentable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gameplay and that's difficult to patent in some cases. A lot of games are iterations of other games. They're just kind of changed enough to maybe fall out of that patent or fall out of that trademark. But what we do with our own IP is we trademark all the marks for that particular thing. We do put we rebranded ourselves in 2018 with a more prominent logo so that we could put that on there. We put it on multiple sides of the product so that from a visual standpoint, you can see that it's an op game. We call ourselves, it's USAopoly is the company name. We call ourselves the op.
The op.
And yeah, and it's a blue kind of a bug that goes on everything or some other color. But what it does allow us to do, we trademark those things. We put them everywhere. So even if it's a licensed product, I can trademark or show that I have a trademark for our logo and that mm-hmm. somebody is reproducing our logo. That's a violation of trademark laws. Registering those trademarks in multiple countries all over wherever we can is paramount to kind of attacking this either from an import side into those other countries or from an actual manufacturing with those other countries. I think when the whole Made in China campaign kind of kicked off and China wanted to improve the world's perception of them, mm-hmm. not so much as the counterfeiters of the world, but as a brand made in China. That's actually been beneficial in a lot of cases for IP owners is that China, as much as we don't want to think that they want to participate in this, they actually do. And the governmental agencies want to squash all this stuff. And with them recognizing US trademarks and being able to at least, you know, they're making their submittals in English for me, in English, so that I can easily fill out that paperwork and get that in the process so they can actually look at it as beneficial. We try to align ourselves with factories that are, you know, doing a lot of other big brands. They don't want to get caught in any kind of a scheme where somebody is counterfeiting anything. And so even before we ship, they want to have all the trademark letters, you know, at their disposal. They want to have all of our licensing agreements at their disposal, permission and authorization letters from the licensors, because we're a licensee.
Right.
That says that we're allowed to manufacture just and ship and export those items from wherever the manufacturing location is. The more people have that information and the more they kind of stick to those rules, I think it gets a little bit better. And these countries are, you know, they're interested in cleaning up their reputation. So that helps and is definitely beneficial.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. So let's talk about some of the common mistakes that you see companies make when it comes to protecting their IP. Is there anything you mentioned? I mean, you don't have to mention names, but what are some of the things, and maybe even you guys, I don't know, maybe lessons learned that, you know.
Our common mistake in the beginning was not realizing there was a problem. And I think
that's a very frequent one. Yeah.
And I think all of us kind of fall into that category is that we know there's probably some out there and you know, it's interesting, the owner of our company and the CEO, when they see stuff out there that's been knocked off or counterfeited, they get incensed. I mean, they're just really upset. Like, how could somebody do that? That's our brand. Why would anybody do things like that? And, you know, the truth is, I mean, there's ad players out there, you know, and they found this as a way to make money and they're going to try and do it. One of the mistakes also that we've made is that we haven't dedicated staff to this particular issue or problem. I wear a lot of hats in the company. A lot of everybody here wears multiple hats. We don't have anybody that's dedicated 100% of their time to IP protection. We do have a lawyer that we use, and he's very good and helps us with all the submissions with everything. But the companies that I've seen be really successful at these things were companies that had, you know, they've got a group that does IP protection, and they're every day they're investigating either online or offline, and they've got people on the ground in multiple places, and they're, you know, using whatever tools that they can to find out who these people are and really getting in there and aggressively stopping them. I learned recently at the IACC conference that I was at, get to know your customs agents that are bringing where your product is being brought in or released through customs. Get to know them. Give them some instructions on what your brand is and what you're bringing into the country. What are your normal routes that you're using? What, you know, all the things, pictures, product, whatever it is. Let them know, you know, what it is that you're trying to fight, where the problems are that you're seeing, where it's coming from, and use those tools to help you out. I don't think we tap into that enough as a...
Yeah, they really do help a lot of brands for sure. And IACC does some great custom trainings as well. So
yeah, and a lot of these online marketplaces, you know, they're trying to give just your average person the ability to have a business and to make a living being a seller and doing all these things. And so you get a lot of a variety of people that are in that arena. And I know from my standpoint with our family, I mean, we're always looking for free shipping, the least expensive and right, whatever it is. The risk is that if it is the least expensive and it is, you know, and all these things that it could possibly not be a legitimate product. And you're kind of buyer beware with a lot of those things. And I like fixing cars and stuff. And so I buy a lot of, you know, trying to find car parts that aren't not official car parts is difficult sometimes in finding right, original, you know, and there's a lot of investigation into finding that. And I think that's, we need to focus more on not always going with the cheapest, you know,
right,
with some of these things.
And you have that knowledge. So you know when you're looking to dig a little deeper, look at those reviews, you know, kind of discern, is this too good to be true? Because maybe it's not the real thing.
Yeah.
Whereas the general public, you know, they don't necessarily know that. So there's a lot of consumer education that needs to happen there.
Yeah. And I go to a lot of our industry trade fairs, you know, whether it be the Hong Kong International Toy Fair or the American mm-hmm. International Toy Fair. And you can walk around and there's a lot of vendors there and manufacturers, especially when you get into Canton Fair and some of those places where you can see like product and the potential for stuff to happen. You know, mm-hmm. and I think one other thing on our part was not overproducing anything and not canceling. You know, if I'm going to order something, a lot of stuff's just in time ordering. If I overproduce and then I cancel an order, and I know just from, you know, my knowledge of the factory and the relationship that we have, in many cases, they've run the entirety of the run and then they're left with a certain amount. They're hoping that you're going to take that amount later on down the road. But, you know, if I don't and I leave them with 1,000 pieces that they've got available, to me, I'm tempting them to offload that item. And, you know, where I have a good person that's in charge of that whole thing and somebody tells the warehouse guy to throw them away, that warehouse guy looks at that and then goes, these are perfectly fine. I could probably sell these online, whatever. You know, in some cases, I think we have the potential of creating these own issues for ourselves because of the way that we do our business. So I try to be in front of the manufacturers as much as possible and really get to know them. They see me. I'm interested in them. They're interested in me. And it's reciprocated back. You know, when they see something that looks off, they'll call me and say, hey, I found your product at this factory. I wish you'd give us the order. And I have to tell them, you know, like, that's interesting. I'm not doing business with that factory.
Right.
And so they automatically go in and they start questioning the owner and asking, you know, like, what's going on here? Why are you doing that? You know?
Yeah.
Relationships, I guess, is the best word.
I mean, as a licensee, you know, I'm sure you see a lot of things for the licensors that you partner with as well out there. Do you do the same thing with them and tell them, hey, we saw?
I try. Yeah, I do. And, you know, if I see something that doesn't look legitimate, and normally most of us, we know our counterparts at these licensing companies. Sure. And so we can ask them, it's like, hey, are you guys, you know, we want to manufacture where you're manufacturing because it's a like product. And can you give me any pointers on that particular factory? So it's kind of a leading question to see if they're actually doing business with them. If they're not, I can say, well, that's interesting. I was recently there and they were producing that. I don't know if you're aware of it, but, you know, do you want to pursue type thing? Yeah.
Right. Again, the full collaboration thing.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about your background, right? So as VP of creative and production, I think, you know, obviously innovation is a big part of it for you guys. You mentioned prior to us getting on board how many inventors reach out with their ideas. So striking the right balance between IP protection and fostering innovation can be a delicate act. How do you balance the need for IP rights protection with the potential for stifling innovation and creativity?
I work closely with the art directors and the creative director that we have here. They work with me directly and trying to get everybody to understand, to put the marks on it that identify that it's us. And mm-hmm. then working that into the creative process and also working that into the design of the product without making the product look too mainstream or kind of, most of our items, the end consumers consider them collectibles because they're unique. They're brands that are existing and we're making an offshoot of that. And so there's the ability for somebody to collect all those items.
It's almost like a fan base, right?
It's like a fan base. Yeah. And so trying not to make it look like the mass market items or those mainstream items and make it look unique and make it look collectible and also have the ability to put brand protection on there is difficult. If I want to put a sticker, like an OPSEC sticker or some other thing that says this is the authentic item that's on there, or this is an authentic product, we have to figure out where do we put that to make it really prevalent, not just for the consumer to see so that they know they're buying a authentic item, but also that it doesn't take away from any of the other design that's on there. Because the, right. you know, our licensing partners want us to really focus on their IP and they're making it so that everybody looks at it. They know that it's, you know, Nintendo, or they know that it's, you know, Dragon Ball Z or something. You know, they know it from a distance without even seeing it. They know that it's Monopoly because it's got the Monopoly logo on the top, not letting it conflict with those IPs that are on there. And then trying to hide stuff, you know, just fine line printing to make it, you know, so that if it is knocked off, we would see that that is because that's missing from the print, or, you know, askew, or it's kind of wonky looking. We can tell that it's been reproduced. And you don't really know that until you get it in hand. So you try to prevent it ahead of time, but, you know, not always able to do that. One of the programs that we use that's been successful, Amazon's a good partner for us. They have the Amazon Transparency program that does allow product that's not Amazon Transparency stickered it doesn't allow it to get into their supply chain. Mm-hmm. For those items that we had that we just had a lot of bad actors that were trying to get in and really counterfeit those items. It allowed us to kind of purge the inventory of those items and not even let them get into the food chain.
That's wonderful.
Which was really good.
Well, interesting. So, all right, let's look at the future now. So 5 years from now, what do you think the future of IP protection will look like? And how do you see your role may be evolving when it comes to that in the years to come?
I see the transition of software that's been able to really scour the marketplaces that are out there online. And I think as that continues to get better within the next 5 years or so, I think it's just going to continue to make it easier to identify when things are where they shouldn't be, and to identify those items either from text or from images. And I think there's a lot of talk about AI and things. And so if I'm monitoring it and I'm pinpointing these particular items are not authorized because it's in a marketplace that item's not authorized, they're using the images from our website and it's been able to pick that up. The smarter that technology gets from a software perspective to be able to scour it and find those things and be able to kick it off automatically, I think will be beneficial because we're just making it more and more difficult for these counterfeiters to sell their product. You know, instead of selling them out, I used to sell them out of the back of a truck, and we watched all the mafia movies, you know, where they're doing stuff like that, you know, and they're got a guy meeting you at a warehouse and you're buying a truckload of goods. And I think the online marketplace makes it so that everybody has the ability to put it on there. And the more the technology recognizes those things and starts to learn and see the patterns of those things, I think it's going to get better. That's probably the biggest takeaway on that whole thing. I think educating the consumers to look out for those items and not necessarily, instead of always looking for the least expensive, look for the most legitimate with a lot of things. And most people want that because they buy these games that we have, they play them, they want to have a good game experience. They want it something they can be proud of to put on a shelf so that they can, you know, brag to their friends or show their family. I have a brother like that. I think educating them as to what to look for when you're looking at these things so that they can start to pick it out and be like your own little private investigative firm that's actually making sure that, you know what, I'm not going to buy that because I'm suspicious of that and I don't think that that's a legitimate product. I think that'll be beneficial. I have two kids. They're in their 20s. I have noticed with them, they're looking for well-made quality items to purchase. If they're going to spend their money, they're going to spend it on something they want and they want it to last and they want it to be a nice item. They're not looking for cheap throwaway stuff that if it's a bad buy, so what? You know, I can just toss it and go find a legitimate one. I appreciate that in this generation that's doing that. I hope that, you know, as they advance with their purchasing power and everything, that they continue down that path and really get educated about that stuff.
Yeah, I've got a couple kids the same way, as a matter of fact. It's very enlightening. I agree.
Yeah.
And finally, let's hear your top tips for brand owners who are looking to succeed in a world of IP rights protection. What advice would you give to entrepreneurs or small business owners for just starting out when it comes to protecting their IP?
I would say the key thing is to register your trademarks. We were late to the game with that whole thing, again, because we didn't think anybody was knocking off the stuff that we were doing. You know, when you think of counterfeits, you think of stuff that's higher end, like the high-end brands. It's not, you know, it's everything possible has the ability to be counterfeited. So take the time to register those items in other countries, especially when you start seeing where these things are coming from, register it there so that you can kind of get a leg up on it. Second point, invest in the people that you have within your organization. Tell them the struggles you're having with IP protection and how can they do some design work that's going to help in the identification of the items once we get started, and let them be part of the solution with that whole thing. The people that we have here, they are my main motivation, along with the products that we produce and the time that we get to play together and to interact with one another. So I think investing in the people is great, you know, and letting them learn, like, why is Paul such an ogre and wants, you know, all these things done and wants to stifle my creativity? That's not the point. The point is trying to make it so that it's a little less, it's more difficult for them to be counterfeited. And we kind of put a little complexity without having to put, you know, too much time into it, but learning, you know, ways to kind of help with that whole thing. And then join organizations, you know, like ICC is a great one. Tap into the government programs that you've got available. Get to know, you know, any of us that are importing new products, we're having to go through customs and border patrol. Talk to them, you know, and get to know them and get to know what their struggles are and how you can help them and give them as much information as they need so that they feel like somebody's got their back to help them do a good job. We're also part of the Toy Association. A lot of these organizations, like for us, the Toy Association, they give, you know, webinars and seminars to help with IP protection and brand protection. And a lot of it's free with, you know, your membership in those organizations. Tap into them, ask them questions. I attend a lot of webinars and just hear what other people's struggles are and what other people's successes are to see how can I implement those successes within the business that we have.
Yeah, those associations are a godsend, especially for small businesses and starting out. So for sure.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be a lot of the big ones. It can be small ones, you know, that whatever industry you're in, be a part of that organization. And there's probably tools in there to help you with a lot of these things. Or there's people that are interested in making your industry better. And if you don't have the time to do it, they might have the time to do it. And they might have some of the resources and know who to ask and be able to kind of further that along in most cases faster than you can, you know, and they might have, a lot of stuff that'll end up helping everybody within the organization.
That's right. Well, thank you, Paul, for sharing your invaluable insights and your experiences with us today. That's all the time we're going to have. But before we end, if our listeners want to follow up with you or get in touch or learn more about USAopoly, where's the best place for them to go?
They can go to our website, which is theop.games. It'll take them there. There's the products that we produce. And then there's a little about us at the bottom where you can find out more about how we came to be and how we got started. And then, I'm on LinkedIn and they can email me directly. I've had other brands that are not in my industry ask me questions about programs that we might be involved in. And I can just talk about the experience that we have and the things that we did to be successful where we can be. And I'm more than happy to respond and talk more about it.
You've been a great guest. I really enjoyed our conversation. And thank you all for listening today. Please be sure to join us for the next episode of the Future of IP Protection podcast. Thanks for listening to the Future of IP Protection podcast brought to you by Mark Vision. If you enjoyed today's show, please do us a favor and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And if you'd like to learn more about how Mark Vision can help you transform your IP protection strategy, visit us at markvision.com. Thanks again, and I'll catch you on the next episode.